Someone recently asked me, what does a producer actually do? I've been asking myself the same question for the last 15 years, but seriously, folks, I thought it might be interesting, at least for the real music heads out there, to pull apart a track I've worked on and explain how the sounds were made and why they were chosen. Plus, it's always been my fantasy to be interviewed for the Classic Albums series. I've picked Shepherd's Pebble Road. These guys are starting to kick some major goals with songs placed in upcoming Hollywood movies and a tour that includes festivals in London and New York. They're also being booked by Chug Entertainment, which is a major coup for such a new band. As most people know, I work on everything from super heavy drop B metal to ultra poppy Katy Perry stuff. I like too much music to just do one thing, but this song represents kind of a nice middle ground on what I do. To get something out of this, you need to have a really good listen to the song first. And then I'm going to play it throughout with the individual parts and ultimately play it in full at the end as well. For some of you, this is going to seem like really basic information. And for others, it's going to feel quite technical. But I've left the real techie stuff out. Only super audio nerds like me would care about that part of it. So first up, let's have a listen to the whole song.
Oh,
Okay. Now, when I first heard the acoustic version of Pebble Road, I loved it straight away. It was really spacious and laid back, yet compelling. The lyrics weren't direct, but they made sense to me. Like, the Pebble Road is a great metaphor for hard times, and it serves up a nice visual to boot. My first thought was, I must not fuck this song up with the wrong production. I wanted to hit the indie pop target, like somewhere in the Washington Ballpark Music Kate Miller-Heidke universe, but without any real limits on what kind of instruments could feature and which couldn't. I like to reference off Australian artists as much as possible. My thinking is, just because a band has been signed in the UK doesn't mean they would get signed here. I mean, even if they're popular here. We had basically decided to mix live percussion with programmed beats and acoustic guitar, piano with anything that Synthland had to offer us. The band was really eager to hear some ambient, dreamy sounds, and luckily I have about a dozen synths that make those kind of sounds, mostly by pressing one key, and I'm the king of one-finger keyboardists. The song came together really quickly once we got started. From memory, the whole thing was done in 2 8-hour sessions, top to bottom. We didn't have a clear idea of where it was headed, but the thinking was to twist it beyond the straight acoustic singer-songwriter genre. George Shepherd is an accomplished keys player, and he's pretty much a one-take singer. Like, he's extremely precise and a perfectionist, but more or less everything he sings is usable. Jay Bovino is an extremely versatile guitar player with great feel, and Amy Shepherd is also a top-notch vocalist, who adds a great vibe to the backing vocals in this track, which you'll hear. She sings lead on about half of the Shepherd songs, and I play guitar and keys as well, so we had plenty of ideas to kick around. With the vocals, I had a couple of things in mind. I was listening to a lot of Bon Iver at the time, and I was keen to approximate the double-tracked sound on something like Skinny Love. I always tend to double-track choruses and bridges, but I have to really force myself to double-track lead vocals in the main. I tend to think it strips some personality out of the vocals. Like, the worst example for me is something like The Offspring. I like to hear the nuances in the voice, and double-tracking can wash that out sometimes. But, you know, something about the Bon Iver tracks works, and I wanted that sound. In this case, all vocals are triple-tracked, with George doubling himself left and right. All harmonies are double or triple tracks as well. These double tracks are automated, meaning the volume moves up and down through the song. So some parts, like the bridge, for example, are heavily doubled. The sound of double-tracked falsetto has always really turned me on, so it gets a major boost right there. I also wanted an epic backing vocal sound, like a huge choir type thing, but we only had 3 singers. Now, I don't sing on anything I produce, nobody really needs to hear that. The solution was to track all 3 singers at once and record them multiple times. The end result is that by the end of the song, there are actually 56 voices happening at once, which sounds like an almighty choir singing in the round. Stick the heaven reverb on it and Transvestite Bob is your auntie. With guitar, one of the first decisions we made was to mess with the sound of the acoustic guitar. Jay had the inspired idea of running the clean mic'd acoustic through an amp simulator. We used the Line 6 Zen model for that. To my ears though, the amped acoustic sounded a little too rough, so I kept the original clean sound in there as well. These two sounds are automated through the song. In parts, it's almost all amp acoustic, and in other parts, it's mostly clean sound. I thought it might be interesting to filter the acoustic as well. A filter is an effect where the top end of the instrument is filtered out, leaving a woolly sound. If you listen to the first verse, you can hear the acoustic kind of fade in and out, going from woolly to mid-rangey to bright. This was a real turning point in the song's evolution because without that standard wall of acoustic guitar, the production was free to move in unexpected directions. The chords and rhythm are spelled out, but more subtly. We did a lot of filtering on the Shepherd tracks, which is unusual for a band like this. You tend to hear that trick more in dance music, but the mix of that filtery ambient sound plus the acoustic instruments gives it a twist. There's also a neat little acoustic arpeggio that comes in the second verse and carries through the second chorus. It's a fairly straight sound, but it's got tons of delay and reverb on it. There's no electric guitar until the final chorus is an outro. You can hear a kind of Coldplay-esque high riff with shitloads of effect coming gradually during the breakdown chorus. There is also a subtle second part harmonising with that during the outro. Those are classic J parts, like he always has a little extra riff floating around that seems to fit. Keyboards for this song were fairly basic compared to some of the other songs that we did. Like, there are some straight piano chords that come in chorus one, and that's a nice sound off George's Roland RD-700. Those chords come in again in chorus two, but in this case they're heavily compressed. That means they sit there as a wall of sound pretty much the whole time. As soon as the chord starts to die off, the compressor turns it up to compensate. It's an old studio trick with a part like this going back to the Beatles. There is a slow synth pad that plays through pretty much the whole track. It's kind of a glassy sound. Verse 2 introduces some swelling tremolo strings, and those came from George and his Roland again. The bridge has a high piano that doubles the vocal melody. This is brightened up by an extra track of marimbas. The combination of those two sounds makes for something special behind the vocal. Again, George played those in pretty much one take, as he normally does. There's a 16th note bass pulse that is there through the whole track. This pulse came from the Novation V station and was classic One Finger Stew. That could be my blues name along the lines of Bleeding Gums Murphy. Real bass guitar comes in the second verse and complements this, but the bass guitar is not particularly bottom heavy because that pulse is already holding down a lot of low end. There is also an old-school Moog, or Moog, if you want to use the proper pronunciation, that enters in verse 2. This is one of my favourite parts in the song, probably because I played it. You can hear it swooping around in verse 2 and chorus 2, and then it gets louder and brighter in the bridge. It functions as a sort of extra bass with octave leaps. It has a really wide sound. I love these classic synths, and a lot of purists will tell you that they've never really been bested. We took a few interesting twists with the drums. There's a subby woolly kick that comes in from the start until verse 2, when a second brighter kick takes over. Live shaker comes in chorus 1 and stays in for the rest of the song. Tambourine is in from chorus 2, and then a jingle bell thing comes in from the bridge. George played all of those. I mean, in addition to being a great singer and keyboardist, he's actually a really good percussionist. See, most people think they can just shake a tambo, but when you actually put them on the mic, you quickly realise that they don't really have the feel for it. Like, there's actually an art to it. It's a black art. Hand claps were tracked over multiple times, and they come in chorus 2. Now, some of those were tracked in my regular live room, which is ironically quite dead, and some out in my rumpus room for even more ambience. By the end of the song, they're on the upbeats rather than the 2 and 4, which gives the song more drive. There are 48 sets of hand clapping by the end of the song. In addition to a light crash cymbal, we threw in a gong to lift the transitions. Now, you first hear it at the start of verse 2. For a little more epicness, we actually reversed the gong so it fades into the hits. It also kind of approximates the sound of a gong roll. Near the end of the session, I heard Jay messing around with a semi-marching beat in the tracking room. I keep an old shitty drum kit lying around just to try out ideas. For some reason, the sound of that crappy snare drum in the room added a perfect ambience to the song. That comes in verse 2 and basically gets louder and louder as the song progresses. By the outro, you can hear it really clearly. Now, talking about the mix of the song, in the most intense part of the outro, there are close to 150 separate elements happening. It's odd because I tend to reflect on this as a simple production that we just did in 16 hours, and granted, 120 of those are octo-tracked percussion and vocal tracks, but it makes for a hell of a job when it comes to the mix, like finding a place for all of that stuff. Everything has to fit within two speakers at the end of the day. The outro on this song kept getting longer and longer. The mix of the R's and the chorus hook just had us enraptured. At a certain point, it went on twice as long, which we deemed to be a little ridiculous. On a song like this, I wasn't totally concerned with it being a neat 3 minutes 30, but I didn't want it to feel extended beyond its natural life either. As I was doing the mix, I tried sticking with choir after the song had technically finished and holding one chord underneath. I washed it out with tons of reverb and delay, and it makes for a rather special ending. And that's how the song was made. So now you know how it's been done and the thinking behind it, let's have one more final listen to the whole song. Here it is, Shepherd with Pebble Road.
See you in time. Wait by my side. Wait for sunshine. Cause it won't take long to get where you wanna go.
take it day by day. Yeah, you take it slow.